Okay, Yud and...
My name is Mishumaya.
Okay, we have the Pasuk. Pasuk Yud and Yud. I'll read the Pasuk again. Hoi hoi. V'nusu mi'eret safa inum Hashem. Hoi hoi, we learned last week, means... Please pay attention. According to the Mitzvot, according to Rashi, hoi hoi is an expression of pay attention. I'm calling out to you and I'm giving you instructions. V'nusu, my instructions to you are to flee me'eretz tzafon, from the land of the north, which appears, Duma Hashem, so says Hashem, according to the Muslim portion, that appears to mean the instructions are Eretz tzafon refers to Bavel, the land of Bavel. Ki, and then the pasuk goes on to say something which appears to be contradictory. Ki ki arba uruchos hashamayim perasti eschem dum Hashem. I have dispersed you. Similar to the distance between the four ends of the earth, just like the extreme distance in this world is the distance from one end to the other, from, let's say, from north to south, east to west. That is how far I have scattered you. So the pasuk can even simply be is to mean that even though you are far, you've been spread out very far away, it doesn't matter, I still want you to return. Or the pasuk appears to be contradicting itself, telling us that on the one hand I want you to return, on the other hand there are people that I do not want to return, people who are not yet ready to return, that we discussed last week. And then it goes on to say, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Hoi, pay attention, Tzion, Himolti, escape, Yosheves, Bas Bavel, those that live, who live in the land of Bavel. Okay, so we're not going to go through the details, but we discussed that there are these two psukim, again, there's different contradictions, and one approach that we dwelt upon was, there's the Golus of the Aser Sashvatim, and the Golus of Yehuda Minyan. And as far as Yehuda and Binyamin is concerned, it is to they Hashem is telling return. However, with regard to the Aser Sashvatim, your time has not yet come. Your time will come later. All right, now, let's see the Malbim. I want to put the Malbim on the screen. Okay, the Malbim. Let me try to get this up for you. Pasuk Yud and Yud Aleph. It's hard to get this thing to be flat. Okay, it's not going to be a perfect picture, but now we'll just do it. Hoi al pize. Hoi al pize. Tziva shagoylim asher bi'eretz tzafon yenusu misham. This command is instructing that the exiles in the land of the north shall flee misham b'nei agoyle asher b'bavel yimoltu l'tzion. Ki ata now lo yi yakibutz haklali ki rak yeshevis bas bavel yeshuv l'tzion kaniska bi'ezra v'nechemia. Shle olu rak mi bavel. So the Malbim is learning, he's learning, understanding the pasuk very similar to what we learned in the Radak, that the instructions to return is not for everybody, it's only for the people, the galus of Bavel. Aval yeser hagoyle shebetzafin v'shehigla sancheidev u'nevuchanetzar lo shavu l'Yerushalayim. The remnants, everyone else besides Yehuda and Binyamin, that are not in bubble, they will now return to Yerushalayim v'chol tzoyis hegam heim lo omdu b'mukaymam. However, the Malbim points out that just because they did not return to Eretz Yisrael does not mean that they remained in the same place. They continued to move. Ki acharei ze nosu misham es hamolchama she'amdu bimei hayavanim ve'haramim v'nif zeru misham le'arba ruchas hashamayim. Shal ze ramaz b'mare shel arba koronos, the four corners, rak yesheves bavel nimlutu l'tzion bimei bayesheni. Saying all this something that is very amazing and definitely opens up a whole new understanding. I mean, besides the pshat, looking at this from the perspective of the people that were living at this point in time, it certainly opens up a perspective from us living today in hindsight. Hindsight is 2020, what this pasuk means. But the Malbim here is saying is that let's look at the people who are living at this point in time. Right now, it's the time of Ezra Nehemiah. It's the time when they're going back to, it's after 70 years of the Churban, and they're going back to build the Beis HaMikdash. And the Navi Zechariah is making two announcements. He's saying, there are some people I want you to return right now to Eretz Yisrael to rebuild. There are other people, no, your time has not yet come to return. But here is the difference between the Malbim and the Radak. From the Radak, you get the impression the people that are not returning are going to stay put. They're not going to move. They're just going to remain. They're going to remain in the location where they find themselves now. The Malbim says no. The people that are not returning to Eretz Yisrael, you're not going to stay put. You are going to travel the world. You're going to go from one country to the next. You're going to be moving throughout the world until ultimately you'll reach your destination. Nobody is going to stay put. Zechariah is making an announcement. Everyone pack your bags and get moving. Where are you going? Which ticket? Which train ticket? Which plane ticket? Well, if you're from Bavel, and Yosheves Bavel, you go to the El Al counter and buy a ticket to Eretz Yisrael. Everyone else, buy a ticket to America. Buy a ticket to Poland. Buy a ticket to Russia. Buy a ticket to Hungary. You will travel the world. You're not yet ready to come. And that's why the pasuk over here means, Hoi hoi v'nusu mi'eretz safar num Hashem. I want you people to flee. In other words, everyone should flee. Not like the Radak that says that the beginning of the pasuk v'nusu is referring to the people who live with the Golos of Babel. No, according to the Malbim, the instructions to flee are referring to everybody shall get moving. The only question is, where are you going? So the pasuk begins by telling us, that the people who are, I guess, from the goals of the Sancheidiv and the Aseres Hashvatim, they shall move and scatter. They shall move from the location that they find themselves in now, further out to the four corners of the world. However, the other hand, Hoi, Tzion, Himolti, Yosheves Bas Bavel, Tzion, I'm assuming here he means, Tzion here, he means that the people who were Yehuda and Binyamin, we're calling them Tzion, you shall escape, Himolti, back, return back to Eretz Yisrael. Really an amazing idea of what Golus is all about. This is the idea that we've discussed the idea many, many times, is what would have been, let's put it this way. There's a silver lining in Golus, not for us, but for the world. What is the silver lining that the world experiences through our Golus? They get to see up close a religious Jew. If the Jewish people would never have gone into exile, the people living in America would not know what an Orthodox Jew looks like. They would not be able to write about him on the front cover of the New York Times about the strange things that they do, phylacteries and tzitzis and wearing a strimal and Shabbos and these massive weddings they wouldn't know what all this stuff is about. They would have no clue. And the fact that the Jews...
I could live with that.
Well, it's not supposed to be the way they portray it, but we don't really know how it trickles down. The fact that they live with us, they get a glimpse into our lives, and we don't realize it, they're very impressed. They see what it means to live a life of fearing Hashem and being mekayim the mitzvahs, and there's no question about it, it makes an impression upon them. There is certainly anti-Semitism, jealousy, hatred, but you have to also realize there are not everyone in the world is like that, and there are people who are very inspired and uplifted and impressed with Klal Yisrael, and it has an impact. And it's Hashem's world, and Hashem wants those people, those sparks out there that are surrounded all over the world, to be impacted by Klal Yisrael. And some of them become gerim, some of them become observant of the Zayin Mitzvos B'nei Noach, and some of them just become better people in general, which serves Hashem's purpose. And we don't understand all of this. So the question then will be, what would happen if Klal Yisrael would not have gone to Golus? If we would have remained in Eretz Yisrael, we would have lived in our own land, there would not be large pockets, large numbers of Jews living throughout the world. How would these other countries, other nations ever get a glimpse, get an appreciation, get to see an insight into what it means to be a servant of Hashem? So the answer given is...
Well, what I'm sympathetic with what you're saying, but on the other hand, when Shlomo HaMelech reigned, then the Goyim all seemed to find their way
exactly.
To be impressed by Klal Yisrael.
Right, so what's the answer? The answer is magnetism. Just like we have in the physical world, you have a very powerful magnet. If you have a magnet in the middle, and you have surrounding the magnet other items, there is a natural pull. That pull will automatically, the world would be curious. They would hear that, you know, there's a place in this world called Yerushalayim, Ir she'chubu lo yachtov, and there's happiness and success, serenity and peace, and their curiosity would be aroused, and they would inquire, and they would naturally be drawn. Those sparks of holiness throughout the world would naturally be pulled through a, just like in the physical world, we know there's something called magnetism. If you have a very strong magnet, it pulls items far away towards it. When Klal Yisrael is living in Eretz Yisrael, and they're doing the will of Hashem, and the Shekhinah is residing in their midst, Klal Yisrael is supercharged. Their koyach hamshacha, their ability to naturally cause others to be drawn towards them, without them doing anything, without them doing outreach, without kir v'chaykim, without all these organizations, just sitting in Eretz Yisrael, doing what you're supposed to do, supercharges the power, the magnetic power of Klal Yisrael, and it arouses people all over the world to take note and to be curious and to be awakened to see what's going on. And those sparks of holiness, it's not for everyone, but those sparks of holiness would naturally find their way to Eretz Yisrael. However, unfortunately, when Klal Yisrael does Averos and the Shekhinah departs, the supercharge of Klal Yisrael is dulled. And the nation no longer has that magnetic power. There is no, we've lost the koyach. We're just a rock. And it's not natural anymore for a spark of holiness to be awakened and to be drawn towards Klal Yisrael. So in this instance, the only way that we can bring those sparks back where they belong is by going to them, is by traveling the world to the four corners of the world and setting up shop. And there are non-Jews, there are Hashem's creatures that take note of us who serve Hashem. And by doing so, that draws them in. So this is This is what the pasuk here is telling us. Klal Yisrael now has gone into galus. There was a Churban Bayis Rishon. And now the time has come for there to be the rebuilding of the Bayis Sheni. And the theme of Zechariah is very clear. The Bayis Sheni is not going to be a replica of the Bayis Rishon. The Bayis Sheni will never achieve the same degree of sanctity, of intensity that was present in the Bayis Rishon. But it will be significant. We can't say it's not going to be anything. There will be a Bayis Sheni, there will be Korbanos, there will be a Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol will go Lefnai v'Lefnim, there will be offerings, there will be miracles. But it's not going to be complete. And it's only going to be a temporary booster shot for the Klal Yisrael to prepare them for the long run. The long run is going to be the 2,000 years of goats, which in hindsight we see how has happened. And in therefore, Zechariah is saying, being that you're not going to be able to achieve the full power to supercharge Klal Yisrael to the degree that they are supposed to be, in order to naturally draw everyone in the world, all those sparks of holiness towards them, you're going to have to do it yourself. Some of you, I want you to go back and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash to bring about a degree of intensity. But that intensity, unfortunately, I know and I see, is going to be limited. Therefore, everyone else, pack your bags and set up Chabad houses in Kalamalu, in you name it, every remote corner of the world where people should see what it means to be an Orthodox Jew, to learn from their good ways, to be inspired and become better people. That's an incredible message of the Malbim. See, only the Malbim said this. The Malbim here is really giving us a very beautiful approach. If we summarize what we learned so far, there are really three approaches. Because the one here in the pasuk is telling us, flee, go home, go back home. On the other end, the pasuk mentions, ki ka'arba, ruchais hashamayim, pei rasti. I have dispersed you. Which seems to indicate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us, you're not going home. You are dispersed. Is that a command that you should be dispersed, or is that a statement? It's difficult to say that it's a statement because it would appear at this point in time in Jewish history, the Jewish people were not dispersed. Ke'arba ruches hashamayim. At the time of the Churban Bayis Sheni, I don't know, maybe I'm saying maybe it's not so, maybe that's part of the dilemma. Where were all of the Jews located? Well, certainly we know that the Golos of Tzion, of Yehudim the Young, were primarily located in Bava. The Chodosh and Hamasker were taken to Bavel, and the survivors from the Churban 11 years later were also taken to Bavel. The Aseres Hashvatim, we assume, were in Ashur. Can we really say that the Jewish people at this point in time, 70 years after the Churban, were scattered? Ke'arba ruches hashamayim? Maybe we can. Maybe we can. I don't know if we have a definitive answer on that. That appears to be why the Malbim is bothered. Maybe it's not absolutely correct that the Jewish people were scattered through every single remote part of the world. Maybe they can be identified exactly where they were. Instead, the pasuk, according to the Malbim, is a command. Hashem is telling Klal Yisrael, listen, right now, there are people in Ashur, there are people in this land, Eretz Tzafon, wherever that is, the Aseres Hashvatim. We can, at this moment in time, identify exactly where the Jews are living. They're living in this country, that country, that country. We know exactly where they are. If we want, we can round them all up. You know what? I don't want to round them up. I want to take a select group. I want to bring them back to Eretz Yisrael to rebuild. And I want everyone else that we can identify not to remain where they are. I want them to be, I'm giving a command that they should be dispersed. They should be scattered all over the world, and by doing so, this will elevate the entire world to appreciate there is a Ribbono Shel Olam. When there is religion in the world, it creates a moral. You don't realize just your presence. I was reading recently a very good book. I have it over here in the Shul of the Year. An incredible book. It was published in Hebrew, and someone told me that this book is a bestseller. You have to read this book. Let me show you the book. Let me stay here. I'll show you the book. I have it over here. Here's his book. See, it's called Secrets of the Soul. Okay, this is published by Rav Shlomo Hoffman. Not by her, he passed away. He was a Haredi psychologist. I didn't read the whole book. There's a biography which I didn't read, and then there are his it was written in Hebrew. This is an Israeli. He was a confidant to many of the Gedolei Yisrael. He was a Talmud of Isaac Sher. Okay, he was a master Haredi psychologist. And it was published in Hebrew. A lot of his ideas, stories, insights into the human condition. And there were rave reviews. But for me, I have a very, very, very slow reader of modern Hebrew, if I can read it at all. And it's just, I have a language problem. So Baruch Hashem, very recently, it was translated, half of the book was translated into English. And I read part of it, and it's really breathtaking. And one thing that's very fascinating, it comes out in this book is, you don't have to say anything. This is something which we all know. A lot of things are Dvar Pshut, but when you just bring it out in words and give examples and show, it just opens up your mind a little bit more. Things are obvious. And one of the you say this is that let's say dealing with children which are abused, children that are suffering. They need just to be in the presence of people who are strong and confident. No one has answers to any question. No one has solutions to any problem. But just being in the presence of a person who has emuna and who is in control of the situation, even when there is no solution in sight, that is 99% of the solution. A child needs to be in the presence of a figure that is strong and confident, even though there's no solution to the problem. And when Klal Yisrael lives in the world, we don't realize how much the Goyim need us. We don't realize, and they certainly don't realize. Klal Yisrael, even the simplest Jew, has enormous storehouses of emun. And he lives his life, whatever the situation is, you go on, you move forward, you're responsible. And there's no solution. We all know that. There's no solution to any problem in this world. But yet, Klal Yisrael has ani mamin be'emuna shelema. We have a gift of emuna. It's Hashem's world. We're here servants, we're soldiers, and we just go forward. When the Goyim, who are totally lost, clueless, in a state of chaos, they just live amongst us, and they just pass us in the street, and they see people who, they can deal with it. The trickle-down effect is enormous. Enormous. And that's part of his Yisrael, not on a global scale, dealing with just basically children who are afraid, who are in a state of of have trouble, have issues, they just need to be in the presence of a figure who is a healthy, strong mind and carries on. That's all they need. They don't need anyone to say one word, because there's nothing to say. There is no solution to any problem. Klal Yisrael being in the world, just existing out there in the world, is what gives the Goyim peace of mind to live. If there was no Klal Yisrael, if they didn't have that moral guide that there are Jews who are dealing with the situation, they go along for the ride. They go along for the ride. They can survive. And that's what this pasuk, according to the Malbim, it's a command. It's a command. Being that you're not going to be able to rebuild the Bayis Sheni to the same degree with the same supercharging power that will automatically take care of the whole world, what you're going to rebuild is going to be weak. So you have to go out into the field and be present amongst the Goyim to keep the world stable. It's a command according to the Malbim. Ki arba ruchos hashamayim peirasti esam. I am going to scatter you. In other words, I created this world, and the world is chaotic. I created Klal Yisrael to be the guide, the or lo'amin. And we learned in Chazal, we learned the Medrash last week. We learned that the world cannot exist. The world cannot exist without Klal Yisrael. Okay, that was what we learned last week. Just like the world cannot exist, the world cannot exist without the four winds of the world. The world cannot exist without Klal Yisrael. But if we merited just being in Eretz Yisrael with the Beis HaMikdash, that would be enough. But because the Bayis Sheni would not reach the potency of sanctity that is necessary, we have to be out there in the field to be present. 99% of life, or to say 99%, is just showing up, is just being there. That already changes the entire environment. Okay, that's the Malbim. The Malbim is giving us a command.
By the way, there is something, a pasuk, I think, I'm not sure if it's in Vaitchanan or Ekev. It says, V'amu ha-goyim, rak am chacham v'navon
ha-goy ha-goy wazeh.
Ki mi goy gadol asher lo Elohim krovim elav, k'ashem Elohim v'chol kohen elav. It affects the goyim.
Absolutely, our presence.
When they see how we are smart, we are book smart, we learn the whole time. What they see, the Jews are always with books, and then they come to business and they're also smart. Chacham v'navon, agoy hagadol hazeh. It affects them.
Absolutely.
Entertainment is another thing. That's for us. We should not merge with the goyim. That's why we need the anti-Semitism. So they hate
That's
us.
That's a scary
That's
thing.
Why they're not with them.
It's a scary
but
thing.
They see us and it
has an effect. Look, it's not for nothing now that all what's going on in the media with the mayor and the governor. Why are they picking on us? Every single day they show examples of Muslims, and they show the Christians, and they show this, they show that at the parks. What is it? Why are they picking with us? Obviously, they're very intrigued with a Jew. There is jealousy, there's hatred, but we're on the top of their mind. There's something about us that bothers them. Their hatred of us, or their, I don't know if we'll call it hatred. There is hatred, there's not hatred, there's jealousy, there's this, there's that. They're intrigued. There's something about Klal Yisrael that doesn't let them live.
Yeah, that's what I call the Martian factor. That we seem like Martians to them.
No, it's not like Mar. No, Martians are big.
That makes us a curiosity, right?
But it's a
curiosity. Before we get to the negative part.
But there's a certain, even though there are, unfortunately, there are a lot of not good things that happen, but there is definitely a certain respect Like Klal Yisrael, you have a moral compass. You have a mission. And the Ummah Yisraelam, they're jealous that we don't have a mission. We're just groping in the darkness. We have no, what do? Watch television, go to the theater, entertainment. What's the purpose of life? And they see, they don't see, they can't explain it. They can't put it in writing. They can't, but they get a sense that a Jew has a mission. And that bothers them to no end, subconsciously, what's our mission? They obviously, these Orthodox Jews, they have a mission. There is something that keeps them going. There's something that gives them energy just to keep on going, the Energizer Bunny. Where is our mission? And that always ends up coming out in them when something like it's happening now in the media, in the world, a pandemic, it automatically arouses them to highlight, to put the spotlight on us unfairly. Even though, you know, you can make the same analysis, you can go to every other demographic in the country. It's because in their subconscious, they realize we're special. And that is by design. They need us. The Chazal said, "Ke'ar beruchos hashman," just like it's impossible for the world to exist without the four winds, it is impossible for the world to exist without the moral conscience of a Jew. Because everyone needs to some degree to be reminded that there's a purpose in this world and there's a God and you have to behave and there is a purpose, there is a mission, whether you, and even a non-Jew to some small degree recognizes that his existence is for a reason, to serve a purpose. And
Rabbi Levine, it works both ways though. On the one hand, for those people who have a sense, some kind of moral sense, consciously or not, then yes, that gives them a reference point. We're a reference point for them. On the other hand, for those seeking to escape that moral imperative, that's one of the sources of anti-Semitism.
Absolutely. It's a double-edged sword.
Ending for that.
It's a double-edged sword. Absolutely. It's with jealousy, and there is a need to cleanse yourself from the moral conscience, to get rid of this reminder that there is a purpose. It's a double-edged sword. And the Ribbono Shel Olam is always focused on the good element. That's what Yadlis teaches us. There's always good and bad. There's toy vera. Hinei nosati lefonecha hayom es hachayim v'es hamoves, es hatoy v'es sara, u'bocharta b'chayim. A Jew's presence in the world for some people is refreshing. And for some people, it opens up for them. They can't deal with it. Horrible anti-Semitism, jealousy, and they totally lose it. The Ribbono Shel Olam's derech, Chazal teach us, is always look for the good. Look for the good and protect yourself from the evil. Hashem sent us out, according to the Malbim, it's so powerful. We're rebuilding the Bayis Sheni. The Bayis Sheni is not going to have that potency. It's not going to give that magnetic pull to the entire world. So therefore, just a select few return to Eretz Yisrael to rebuild. You should have a homeland, a center. But everyone else, Malbim only, I'm giving you a command. Chabad is mamish. This is the whole Chabad. It's all mamish built on this and this idea. I'm giving you a command. Get out there. Go out there to the four corners of the world and go. Be present. The Chabad. Their idea is to be very active. Is hands on. A lot of people don't look at it like that. A lot of people they look at just being there. Just being there is enough. I know a Khan shul over here at Flatbush. They made this Agra de Pirka. So they have now it's severely diminished because of the situation. But they have a koil there for Balabatim every day. You cannot deny the fact. I see this with my own eyes. Just the fact that right here in the heart of Flatbush, every single day, there's a Mokum Torah of Balabatim learning. it really changed the whole atmosphere, the whole environment. The fact that you have a yeshiva in a community, it changes everything. You don't have to walk in there. You don't have to walk in there. Just the fact that it's there, it definitely has a very powerful effect. Now, to what degree should you be hands-on? Chabad, there derech is. It's not enough just to be present. You have to go out there to the subway. Did you put on tefillah today? You know, you have to really be real hands-on. Not everyone goes for that. That's really going a little bit too far. You know, you saw like some, you have a koil in the community, just the presence of 10 people. I always tell you this story. I forgot the name of the person. It's a story which blew my mind when I read it in detail. I don't know. I remember the names. I heard part of the story from Rabbi Aaron Rakefet. And the part of the story that to me really is the most important part of the story, unfortunately, I don't think he ever said. But maybe someone here remembers the name. It's already been a long time since I heard the story. There was the Rebbe of Rav Aaron Cutler. What was his name? I forget everything. But Rav Aaron Cutler's Rebbe was a very poor man. Unfortunately, literally destitute. And he came to America to survive, just to make a few dollars. He got a job in kashrus in Chicago. In the early, probably, I don't know, was it the 30s, the 40s? In the very, very early years. And it was a horrific scene. It was the mafia. And when this rabbi came and started making trouble for them by telling them that the food is not kosher and this and that, they literally wanted to eliminate him. So one day they conveniently locked him deliberately in the freezer. He was doing an inspection in the freezer in Chicago, and they very conveniently just somehow closed the freezer door while he was inside, and he was locked in the freezer, and he was going to die. It was Erev Shabbos, and he was going to die very soon. And a miracle happened. Someone who was not supposed to be there showed up, and it was in the wrong place. Just a miracle happened, and got him out and opened up the freezer, and he survived. He was so shaken up from that event. He took his family on Shabbos. He was mechallel, this is the Rebbe of Rav Aaron Cutler. On Shabbos, he got on a train. It's pikuach nefesh to remain here in Chicago. They're going to kill me. And he ran away. He ran to New York. I don't remember the end. Okay, it's a famous story. Rabbi Aaron Rakefet says over the story many, many times. Unfortunately, my memory is not so great. I don't remember the name of the person, the years, and the details. He loves to go over the story in utter detail. And there's another part of the story which he does not say, which is written up, was written up elsewhere. And those words, that part of the story blew my mind. And they say and they claim, I'll explain in one moment, that when he left Chicago on a train on Shabbos, he said, even though these people here are such rishayim, they're so wicked, they're willing to murder me, I want to tell you one thing. If 10 people would sit down in Chicago, 10 people to devote themselves, to have a koilel, just to sit and learn, l'shem shamayim, it would change the whole Chicago. When he was running for his life on Shabbos, Mechallel Shabbos, to save his life because they tried to murder him, he said, you know what they're missing here? There's no Mokom Torah. There's no nucleus of sanctity in this Mokom. There's nothing here. They need to have a Mokom of 10 people learning Torah L'Shem Shemayim. That will create a nucleus of sanctity. That will be the moral conscience of the entire community that will change everything. They say, if this is true or not, I don't know. I can't tell you, but this is what I remember reading, that Rav Aaron Cutler, when he heard this, that story, those words, is what inspired him to create the Lakewood Yeshiva. If 10 people Israel can sit in Chicago, would change the whole Chicago. Could you imagine what it will be if you have a yeshiva? Those days, there was no such thing, unheard of. You can say a kollel. Akayla, they would tell, if they would, someone would tell you that today they would be over here in Yom Gizel Midwood on Zoom, people coming to learn Torah, they wouldn't believe it. Impossible. Gotta get mind. If Aaron Kala, if that is that what he says, Rebbe said, can you imagine what a yeshiva would do for America? It would change the whole America. That was what inspired him. And according to the Malbim, that's the instructions of this pasuk. You're not going to be able to rebuild what you had before. So you're going to have to go out there. And when you go out there, you're going to go to the four corners of the world to establish, to be present. Your presence creates, is the moral conscience of the people that of your society, and changes the way they behave, the way they think. And we know this is true. We see this is true. Look how the goyim, how they're just obsessed with us. They're obsessed with everything an Orthodox Jew does. What is this guy doing? Like, why are they so upset? Because they see a Jew has, they can detect a Jew has a mission. What the mission is, I don't know. But that's part of the emunah of a Jew. There's a mission. And you just march forward. And they so sorely lack that. It's true, as Michal said, this is one of the many multiple dimensions of anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism has many colors and flavors and reasons, and this certainly is one of them, which this jealousy or this moral conscience which is a conflict to their way of life causes a situation which can be very dangerous. But yet, for many of them, it's very refreshing. And it's very healthy. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu only looks at the good. He looks at the good. Hine nasati lifnechem hayom es hachayim v'es hamoves es hatoy v'es hora uvacharto b'chayim. And that's the pasuk over here. Okay, let's take a look over here now with Mamor Chazal.
By the way, when they see what's happening now, the Jews gathering, where do they gather?
For religious services.
In Shigur, in Batei Sefer. And in Batei Midrash, not in bars, and not in
the beaches.
And that when they see that there is a gathering, however, the gathering is holy, in only in holy places, the goyim sees it, and it really affects them.
It does subconsciously. They don't even realize it. I don't believe that Cuomo and Julia and what am I saying, Julia and de Blasio. I don't believe that they are, it's their subconscious that is causing them to focus on the Orthodox Jews. It just goes to show how they've been in politics for a long time, these people. They've dealt with Orthodox Jews for decades. They've seen a lot of things, good and bad. And there's no question, it's a very complicated mix. Okay, they don't like us. There's a very complicated mix. But part of that mix is a respect.
Respect.
Is a respect. It's part of it. It's part of that mix. There's a respect and there's an awareness that we are better. There's someone to talk to. Talking to the African Americans, there's no one to talk to. There's the Muslims, there's no one to talk to. The Catholics, there's no one to talk to. There's just no one to talk to because they don't have any. But to us, okay, obviously they also don't like us because unfortunately we're not make mistakes.
I have to disagree a bit with that.
Yeah.
First of all, when it comes to Cuomo and his arrogance, I don't even want to get into that, what he's been saying. But first of all, among evangelicals, there is someone to talk to. There's no question about that.
But you don't hear any dialogue. You don't hear any dialogue.
I was just on a Zoom session last night where there was, you know, Jewish and non-Jewish people who support morality, who support America and Israel, believers. It's pretty amazing what's out there.
Okay, it's true. That's the purpose. That's the goal. That's why Hashem put us here. It's for those people. Hashem, even though those people may be the minority, exactly, Rav Michal, even though we may be the minority, that's why we're there. For them. Because they're the ones who gain, they're the ones who Hashem wants. Every single person has value to Hashem. And these people to whom they derive from Klal Yisrael encouragement and chizuk is exactly what it's all about. It's not for the people who hate us and want to kill us. It's not for them. They're the ones who make all the noise. Empty cans make a lot of noise. That's the old Yisrael in life. Okay, let's go see the Mamori Chazal. Chazal did not obligate us to be masker tal and ruchas. Now that means you don't have to say, nusach Ashkenaz. Let's focus on nusach Ashkenaz. Nusach Ashkenaz in the summertime does not say mashiv haruach umayrid hatol. So this Gemara is obviously a very strong support to Nusach Ashkenaz. Nusach Sfard, they don't say Ruach, they say Moirid HaTol. Hashem brings down dew. They do not say Mashiv HaRuach Moirid HaTol. You have to be careful because if I'm not mistaken, there is a Nusach, which is not all that common, where they do say that. Mashiv HaRuach. Yeah, I know it's not so common. It's not common, but there are some who do say Mashiv Haruach Umayrid Hatol. It's not all that common. It's true, but generally Nusach Svard, they just mention Tal. Nusach Ashkenaz mentions nothing, zero. And here the Gemara mentions Tana. We learned Betal Uveruchais in the summertime. Loi Chivu Chachamim LaHasker Betfila V'Imbala Hasker Masker. If you want, you can. Okay, that's the reason why some say Tal and some say Mashiv HaRuach Umayrid HaTol. My timer, what's the reason? Why is it not necessary? Why is there no obligation to mention the winds and Tal? My timer, Amar Bichanina, Lufi She'en Ne'etzodin. Okay, that's the reason, because this is part of nature. Tefillah, there's a very important Yisrael in Tefillah. This Gemara reveals to us a very powerful Yisrael, which a lot of us don't, it's hard, not, you don't always appreciate this. When we die, unfortunately, many of us, we're not such believers in tefillah, because life is very rough, can be very rough, and we don't really see that our tefillahs, we don't really see how all the dots are connected. So what do we look at tefillah? We look at tefillah just an acknowledgement of the world. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he runs the world. But not that we have the ability to make a change. Unfortunately, when tefillah becomes mitzvahs anoshim b'limuda, when it becomes rote, when it just becomes lip service, we go through the services three times a day to acknowledge that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's your world, and you do whatever you want, and we have really no power to influence you to make a change. It's a very powerful Gemara. That's not true. The entire purpose of tefillah is to cause Hashem to do things that he would otherwise not do. That's a shocking statement. The whole purpose of prayer is to change the reality. If you want everything to be Hashem's will, just should remain the way it is, then you do nothing. You do nothing and the world, Hashem runs the world. The goal of davening, when you sit down to daven mincha, ma'ariv, shachris, it's to bring about a change that would otherwise not happen. That's a powerful statement. And how do you know that's true? Because chazal, there's no need to say mashiv haruach ha'morid hatol. You know why? Because that's going to happen anyway, whether you like it or not. Whether you like it or not, the wind's going to blow. Whether you like it or not, every single morning there's going to be on the earth tal. So you don't have, it's going to happen anyway. And that's not what tefillah is. Don't waste your breath. Don't waste your time. You want to daven? The purpose of you davening is to make a change in something that would otherwise not happen. Rain, now what's the chiddush now when it comes to rain? It's not going to rain. The eid yala min ha'aretz, Rashi tells us clearly, that if not for man praying for rain, it will not rain. It's not going to. You need to make that every single time that it rains in this world, it's only because there was a person somewhere who is mispalel to Hashem that it should rain. Chazal tells us sometimes even an animal can be mispalel. I don't know exactly. Sometimes it rains in the schus of the animals. What does that mean exactly? It means the animal has the animal is mispalel. I don't know. I don't know what that means. It says v'odam ayin la'avod es ha'adama. It seems that the koich of tefillah depends on man, not on animals. But the Gemara says sometimes the animals, Hashem doesn't want them to suffer, so Hashem allows it to rain for them. And once it rains for them, so it rains for us also. So what does that mean exactly? I don't know. But generally, the purpose of tefillah is to make a change. And in the Mela, that's why we do not mention rain and wind. And here the Gemara says, how do you know that winds don't? Let's see. That does not deny winds. What exactly does this pasuk mean? Ilema hachi kamaluhu Hakadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael div dar tinhu. I have dispersed you. Pizarti eschem. I have scattered you. Ba'arba ruchei de'olma. Ihachi. If that is what the pasuk means to say, ke'arba, it's grammatically incorrect. You would lose points on an exam. It should not say ke'arba. It should say be'arba. Ki be'arba ruchos hashmaim I scattered you. Elohi kamar. What's mean ke'arba? Hashem is saying the Jewish people are like, we just mentioned this before last week, k'shem she'i'afshol le'olam b'loy ruchos kach i'afshol le'olam b'loy Yisrael. The world cannot exist. The Radak quoted this Maimur Chazal. We did this on Friday. Quoted this Chazal. Next Chazal. Oma Rabbi Elazar Hamodohi Oimer. Kishabo Amalek Lahazik Es Yishol Mitachas Kanfei Haviyem. Shabbat Shamayim. When Amalek came to damage the Jewish people, notice the beautiful expression from under the wings of their Father in Heaven. The Anani HaKavoid. He calls the Anani HaKavoid the Kanfei Haviyem. When you go into the sukkah, according to Rebbe Elazar Hamodoi, you're going under the kanfei, the wings of Aviyam Sheba Shamayim. Omar Moshe Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Bonecha She'ata Osel Lefazron Tachas Ruchas HaShamayim Shenemar, Ki Ke'arba Ruchas HaShamayim Perasti Eschem. So what is he saying over here? Rosh Zebo Lichalon Mitachas Kinofecha. This Rosh, Amalek, is coming to destroy them. Is to destroy them from under your wings. Let's finish up. Sefer Torah Shenasati Lohem Mi Yikreboy. Okay, so this he's only giving us part of this Nechilta. Again, let's just clarify what he's saying. What he's saying over here. That he's taking this pasuk, that Moshe Rabbeinu complained to Hashem that when Amalek came to attack Klal Yisrael, Moshe said he viewed it as Maisa Ovoi Simin Labanim. In other words, when Klal Yisrael were in the desert for 40 years, okay, this is a very basic yisoid. We were in the desert for 40 years and we went through 42 masois, 42 journeys. Those 42 journeys were Maisa Avo Simon Labanim, a fulfillment, a practice run, or how should we say it, foreshadowing of the fulfillment of this pasuk, ke'arba ruchos hashamayim peirasti eschem. Traveling 42 journeys, going here, going there, wandering in the desert. This was the foreshadowing of the fulfillment of the Jewish people being scattered, dispersed throughout the four corners of the world. And when he saw Amalek entering into these clouds, into the situation, this was a remez that during this era of Golos, when we would be dispersed, scattered, we would suffer from an enemy called Amalek that would try to cut us down. And what was the danger? There's another very, very relevant point. Sefer Torah Shnasati Lohem Mi Yikre Boy. Incredible insight. Moshe Rabbeinu's concern when we will be in Golos and scattered, he wasn't concerned about they're not going to be able to take the Dalad Minim. They're not going to be able to sit in a sukkah. When you're in Golos, I remember my father told me when he was in Bar Park and his little child, the whole block was Italians. And they one day they came, the shkatzim on the block, and they literally burnt down the sukkah in their backyard. They were in the house, parents home, don't go outside. It's very dangerous. In Bar Park, right here in Bar Park. And the Italians, they literally torched their sukkah. They burnt it down to nothing. When you're in Golos, you can't do the mitzvahs. You can't necessarily go into the sukkah. You can't take dalad minim. You can't have the shechita. They prevent us from doing bris milah. They prevent you from every single mitzvah. And what is Moshe Rabbeinu concerned about? When the Jews are going to be in the matzah, in the situation of they're going to be in Golos, he's concerned. Sefer Torah shenosata lohem mi yikre bo. They're not going to be able to study Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu's concern of Amalek attacking the Jewish people when we are in Golos is only about what's going to be with Talmud Torah. The Talmud Torah keneged kulam. Okay, the big debate amongst Jews, especially amongst secular Jews, is what is the secret to Jewish continuity? What should we invest in? Give big, big bucks, hundreds of millions of dollars. Where should it go to guarantee Jewish continuity? Should it be birthright? Everyone should go to Eretz Yisrael and every teenager should have a free trip to go and see the land. Should it be Zionism? Should it be, I know you, there are a lot of different ideas that are expressed, a lot of money spent. And at the end of the day, what wins the day is Jewish education. Jewish education is magic. Okay, obviously everything that is done has value. It's not proper to knock any idea to guarantee that a Jew should remain committed to his Judaism. But there's one thing that is certain, that certainly carries enormous, enormous weight, and that is the Talmud Torah keneged kulam. Moshe Rabbeinu, this Maamar Chazal certainly expressed that idea. He tells us that it brings out over here three essential ideas of Golos. Number one, the 42 Masois that we experienced under the Anani HaKavod was foreshadowing this pasuk, Ki Arba Ruches HaShamayim Perasti Eschem. The 42 Masois represents the journeys of Klal Yisrael in Golos, in the world. And we always say that when Mashiach will come, we'll be able to look back in hindsight to take the entire span of Jewish history of Golos and divide it into 42 parts. And we'll be able to see parallels between what happened in each one of these journeys to an era of Jewish history. And likewise, in every single person, their life can be divided into 42 parts to correspond to each one of these 42 journeys. That's Yisoid number one. Yisoid number two, during this time that we are vulnerable, that we are in exile, who is our arch enemy number one? Amalek. That's our arch enemy. Amalek, every generation takes on a different form. It's always changing colors and shapes and ideas, but the essence of Amalek is one thing only. V'lo yorei Elokim. That's the essence of Amalek. And what's the third lesson of is that what's the ultimate danger that they're going to do is the prevention of reading the Sefer Torah, which obviously represents the concept of Talmud Torah, the guarantee of Jewish continuity is Jewish education. The Salmud Tarkenei Kulam, we say by Ne'ila, Ein Lanu Shiur Rak HaTorah Hazos. After everything is said and done, all we have left is Torah. This year, there was no Shofar, and there was no Lulav. Shofar was only the second day, which is Midrabanan. Lulav was only the second day, only Midrabanan. There was no Shofar, there was no Lulav. Shavuos, how many people went to shul on Shavuos? It was still in the middle of the pandemic. It was still people, the shul the first week of Pesach was zip, zilch, zippo. There was nothing going on at Pesach. So what do we really have left? Jewish education. Okay, let's go to the next chazal. Last chazal, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Omar, hoi tzion himolti yosheves bas bavel. Hoi here means... Hoy here means pay attention. Pay attention. Pay attention. Tzioni malti yosheves bas bavel. Amar Rabbi Yehuda kol ador bavel kilu dor be'eretz Yisrael. That's a shocking thing to say. That's a very dangerous thing to say. Anyone that lives in Bavel, kilu dor be'eretz Yisrael shnemachoy tzion, he malti tzion escape yosheves bas bavel. Here we're calling, here in the brackets, it gives a Beor, Harei Shekina, it describes, it gives the term, as Yoshvei Bavel, those that live in Bavel, B'Shem Tzion. Now that's very dangerous, because you can get carried away, and you can say there's no need to go to Eretz Yisrael. If you live in Lakewood, they call Lakewood the Lakewood Ir HaTorah. Now they call it Lakewood Ira Torah in contrast to calling it the Ira Kodesh. No one would dare call Lakewood Ira Kodesh because there's only one Ira Kodesh, Yerushalayim Ira Kodesh. But in my worthless opinion, calling Lakewood Ira Torah is just as disgraceful. It's just as disgraceful because Ki Mitzion Teitzei Soira Udvar Hashem Yerushalayim. How dare you call Lakewood the Ira Torah? How dare you? Ki mitzion teitzei soira. So it's a terrible chutzpah to call Lakewood Ira Torah. It's a disgrace. And they do this all the time with no bushu uchlima. And what will they answer? They'll answer me with this chazal. They're going to answer me, call. They're going to answer that Amar Rav Yehuda. They'll quote me chapter and verse. Kesubis daf kuf yud aleph amud aleph. Amar Rav Yehuda, call hadar b'bavel. Anyone that lives in Bavel, ki'ilu dar be'eretz Yisrael. Shenemar hoi tzion, himolti yoshev espasol, shakina yoshev b'bavel b'shem tzion. Then in Bavel, there's a tzion in Bavel. And what is ki mitzion teitzei soira? If you're in a mokom of Torah, in a place of Torah, so you're like in tzion. Okay, there is truth to it. Not coming to deny, there is definitely truth to it, but obviously you get too comfortable. If you get too comfortable in Golos, it ain't good. Kadosh Baruch Hu is really shaking us up big time. Okay? He's really shaking us up big time now, reminding us it's not so good to be in Golos. This is not where we belong. Don't think you're the Balabatim here. This is not your land. This is not where you belong. Not in New Jersey, not in Brooklyn, not in anywhere in Golos. Jew belongs in Eretz Yisrael. But obviously, if you have to be in Golos, if you're forced, then Bavel was a mokaim of Torah, of intensity, where they learned Torah. They didn't do anything else but learn. In Bavel, a lot of historical things have to be analyzed. What exactly, what kind of life they lived in Bavel. They lived in abject poverty in certain parts of Bavel. They were devoted to Torah. And for that reason, the Pasuk here says it was like living in Tzion. Tzion is Ki Mitzion Teitzei Soira. Now, there's a Mincha Shai here. I really want to do the Mincha Shabbat. Maybe we'll do it tomorrow. We'll look over the Mincha Shabbat. It's a very long Mincha Shabbat, which is a little bit interesting. So we're out of time now, but I want to tell you, before we go, I'll tell you one thing about a Goel Hagra. I remember many years ago, there was a Goel Hagra taken. It should not have been taken. It was Shaloi Kedin. You don't make a girl, no one today has a right to make a Goel Hagra. You know what a Goel Hagra is? You take a special chumash that has like two columns on it. It's like one of these old chumashim. You know, they're not available today. It's a collector's item. And you mish 7 times blindly. You close your eyes and you move it around 7 times. And then wherever it lands, you put your finger randomly on the page. And then I don't know exactly how you do it. From there you go and you go 7 columns. Or seven columns, 7 lines, 7 psukim, I don't know, 7 letters, then you find the letter, and then from that letter you look for the next pasuk that has that letter. It's a complex process which I don't know how to do. And traditionally, to do this, you have to be a very, very holy person. And you have to fast for days to be eligible to be on a level where you can expect that Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to provide you with an answer to your question by moving your finger to the exact location where it will tell you the pasuk that you're supposed to find. Okay, so no one does this today. It's not done. There's only a tradition when you do it, and the only time it was traditionally done is when a person is lost. Amber alert. When there's an amber alert, that's when you do it. Where did the person go? A person is missing in action. Traditionally, the Goel Hagra, that's what it was done for. Person goes missing, you go to a holy, saintly person, tzaddik, and he fasts for a couple of days, and he does the Goel Hagra, and the pasuk gives you guidance where to look to find the person.
They do it for Aguna also?
There are a lot of stories about Goel Hagra that are totally false, totally nonsense and false. It's a dangerous game. Goel Hagra is something that we don't do today. No one does say, but I'll tell you a story that I know firsthand, and I can tell you the whole story is Shaloi Kedin, but it's funny nevertheless. There was a Maisha Haya where basically it was involved about a Sefer Torah. Okay, something happened about a Sefer Torah, and there was a person who was present that was present observing a certain thing about the writing of a Sefer Torah, whatever it was, and he was very upset, and he thought there was a problem, so he went to ask a Rav the Shaila, told the Rav what happened. The Rav said, "It's a very big problem. You're right. Let me look into it." The Rav, after a lot of careful analysis, concluded everything is A-OK, kosher. He wasn't happy. So the rabbi said, "Okay, I'll tell you what. I'm going to go to the big guns, the big people." So he went, I think, to Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Rav Yosheber Soloveitchik's brother, goin shebe goin. He went to Rav Aaron Soloveitchik and he asked him shayla and he passed in kosher. The person wasn't happy, so he went to Rav Pam. Rav Pam passed in kosher. He then went to another person. Who was the fourth person? I know who the person was. Okay, whatever. Another Rashiva. Another Paisik. This is Paisik. And he told him it's good. I'm telling you, it's a true story. 4 people told him it's good. But he had chutzpah. Merdik, chutzpah noira. 4 Paiskim told him everything is good. He wasn't satisfied. So you know what he did? It is hilarious. You can't make up this stuff. You really can't make this stuff up. He did a Goel Hagra. That's ridiculous. Torah lavashamayim. This person is no way on a level to make a Goel Hagra. Okay, this person can rattle off to you his favorite television shows. And this guy is not a guy to make a Goel Hagra. Okay, there's nothing to talk about. But he did it anyway. He couldn't keep, whatever. He was very, you know what the pasuk was? It was this pasuk. Hoi hoi, v'nusu me'eretz safa num Hashem, ki ke'arba ruchos ha'shamayim, perasti eschem num Hashem. He told Rabbi, this is what it says. What does it mean? What does it mean? So the rabbi said, Al tikre perasti with a sin, ella perashti with a shin. You asked four people a question, and they all told you it's good. Enough already. Ki ka'arba ruchos ha-shamayim perashti. The shin. I've already explained the answer to you from four corners of the world, meaning four different halakhic opinions have already decided that this is good. So calm down. Everything is good. Now, isn't that a funny story? I mean, this person is not on the level to make Oral Hagra. And I can't even imagine that he did it correctly, because he doesn't even know how to make Oral Hagra. And you don't make girl a girl for halachic matters, and v'chulu, and yet this was a coincidence, the pasuk that he came up with, which almost openly said to him, didn't you already get four halachic answers to the question that told you that perash explained and explained to you that it's okay? So this story always lingers in my mind, and that's why when I read this pasuk, I always think about that story, and I want to share that with you. All right, we're going to take now a short break, and then we're going to learn about the keshes, the rainbow, this week's parasha.
Rabbi Levine.
Yes.
Rabbi Levine, excuse me. Today is Rosh Chodesh. I remember we once went through, we had a discussion on the kavanos of the Musaf Rosh Chodesh.
The Shem Hashem, yes.
In today, in Chodesh Cheshvan, there's a pasuk, I guess, Udvash Hayom Hazeh Hashem. Where is that pasuk? Does anybody know?
Let me look it up for you right now. I'll look it up for you this moment. Let's see.
I've never heard of that pasuk.
Okay, what's the pasuk? Let me write. What's the pasuk?
Udvash. Hayom hazeh yudkei vavkei.
Hazeh?
Yeah. Udvash hayom hazeh Hashem.
I think it's in Shmuel, it seems. One second. Okay, I think that's in Shmuel by Yehoinasan. Udvash hayom hazeh, this pasuk is in I have it here. Shmuel Aleph, Perik Yudalid, I think.
Okay.
Look in Shmuel Aleph, Perik Yudalid, Pasik Mem Hey.
Okay.
See if you find it. See if you find it over there.
Okay.
The Siddurim should have it. This is only in the footnotes. Look at an article doesn't have the footnote where it is. Oh, they don't have the psukim. Okay, we're gonna take a short break, and then we're gonna learn about the rainbow a little bit. Okay.